Hey, Blenders, thanks for tuning into this week's episode. We're going to be talking about more movies getting delayed. Jonathan Majors being cast in Ant-Man 3, Madonna directing her own biopic, and then we react to the Mandalorian trailer. So thanks for tuning in. Enjoy this week's show. Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 135 of Real Blend, a podcast that is written by, directed by, produced by, and starring Madonna. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here at Cinema Blend, and I am joined, as always, getting ahead of myself. 135 episodes into this, you'd think I would know what I'm doing, but Gabe shifts it up every single week. On this week's show, we have superheroes delayed yet again. Nothing is going to be opening in 2020. We're going to review The Devil All the Time, which is going to surprise you guys. One of us liked it and one of us hated it. And we're going to react to the new Mandalorian trailer. And by we, I mean Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago, sporting his Pulp Fiction tee. Hi, Jakey. How are you?
I'm just going to start breaking out a new t-shirt every week.
I do like that you're doing that. Yeah. Because it's giving people reason to go to the YouTube channel, which I'm going to plug in a second after I introduce Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I do like the shirt. Wait, what was the other one that was super bold?
Metallica. Oh, yeah. I literally got it from the same shelf at Target, $12.
Target has phenomenal t-shirts, by the way.
Great collection of t-shirts.
I got really a Blockbuster shirt there, a Taco Bell shirt there. They're not sponsoring our podcast, but Jake's on to something with Target. They do have legit good stuff.
When I was shopping for Christmas gifts for the boys, and not that I was just shopping at Target, but I happened to be out looking for things that I thought the boys would like. I saw, and by this I mean you guys, the boys, they had a t-shirt, and it was the perfect blue and yellow combo, and it said make it a Blockbuster evening, but they didn't have Kevin's size. I was so upset because I really wanted to get that one for him. So,
well, I appreciate you thinking of me, but I do want to say, because I know we're not getting into this on the show today, but you mentioned the boys. If anybody is watching season 2, episodes 3 and 4
I haven't watched 4, but I think three was good. But I just think as a whole,
you love 3.
Like 3 was fun, but like Jake. Overall, I'm not into. I feel like my concern is that the novelty of that show has worn off for me.
Oh, dude!
Like beyond 3. beyond the bit, which is like, what if superheroes were assholes? I feel like there's not. I'm worried that there's not as much there as season 1 led me to believe.
Watch episode 4. Okay. Stormfront, man. Stormfront's my jam.
All right. Well, we are the podcast that answers what if movie critics were assholes, essentially. That's our bit. Housekeeping. We're on YouTube. And that's going to be really important this week.
We've got 84 different YouTube channels.
We do. We have a lot of YouTube channels. Two, specifically, is what Gabe would like to say.
Two channels. That's not a lot.
So we would like for you guys to head over there and subscribe to them, because on one of them, we play the entire show in video format. And that's why Jake wears his fancy t-shirts. That's why Kevin gets dressed up from the waist up in a jacket and tie. And that's why I'm wearing my Fantastic Four t-shirt for you guys to appreciate. The other channel is Clips, where we pull out segments from the show, interviews that we're doing. Sometimes we have spoilery type things that we get from people in our interviews, and we can run them on the Clips channel. So please go over to YouTube, search for Real Blend, and give a subscription and a like to each of those channels. And of course, I want to remind you guys that starting tonight, I say tonight because we're recording this on Tuesday, but it's going to be going all week long. We're going to be partnering with Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, and they're going to be playing documentaries on their YouTube channel. For a lot of the filmmakers that we've been praising on this show, Martin Scorsese, Clint Eastwood, Stanley Kubrick. The Kubrick one is about The Shining specifically. The Scorsese one's about Goodfellas. We recorded introductions for each of these documentaries, and then the Real Blend guys are going to be live tweeting during the screenings of these documentaries. You're going to be using the hashtag WBFilmmakers. So we would love for the Blenders who are listening to this to please head over there. They start at 8 o'clock Eastern. Every night for the rest of this week, and then Monday and Tuesday of next week. They're going to have Spike Lee is doing one for, I believe it's Malcolm X. We have Frank Darabont talking about The Green Mile. So just some really great documentaries, and hopefully some really good conversation between us and the Blenders. So please join us on social media using the hashtag WBFilmmakers.
Does Warner Brothers not own the rights to Shawshank? I know it's a Castle Rock film, but I don't know where Castle Rock
falls.
That's
a great question, because Darabont has The Mist and Shawshank.
Right.
And then they went with Green Mile.
I love Green Mile, but I just think it's interesting that Yes, that's the film that they chose to do the documentary about.
It has to be something to do with the fact that they don't have rights to The Green Mile. Shawshank, because that would be the one that I would choose. And The Mist. I don't know what studio The Mist is, but God, The Mist is incredible.
I love The Mist. That's like an underrated horror gem. One of the greatest endings I've ever seen in a film.
Did you guys ever watch it in black and white?
No. Didn't know that was an option.
Frank Darabont apparently wanted to shoot the movie in black and white. This is from what I remember hearing. I don't know if this is 100% the truth, but I just remember hearing he wanted to shoot it in black and white and they wanted him to release it in color. So they put the black and white version on the Blu-ray and the DVD. And then the same thing happened with Mad Max. Now, I don't know.
I gotta be honest, the whole watching a movie in black and white when it wasn't filmed in black and white it does nothing for
me. But Darabont wanted it in black and white, from what I understand.
Sure, but you shoot a movie differently in black and white than you do in 100%. Color. Just straight up putting a black and white filter on your movie, it doesn't really, like, the whole, like, oh, I'm gonna go back to see Mad Max, but this time it's in black, like, it doesn't.
I wonder what's the choice behind it. Like, what's the creative choice?
I don't know that Miller was ever initially releasing that movie in black and white, but I mean, his was like the black and chrome, so it was like more that was the idea. But you know, Jake's right though. When you shoot black and white, your lighting is completely different. It's a very different setup. It's a different. I mean, I think one of the greatest black and white films I've seen in our modern filmmaking was Good Night, Good Luck. Which I thought was, that was black and white, right?
That looked outstanding.
That was
everybody was smoking in that movie. Yeah. And smoke adds so much to it.
Amazing. You know, another one, Conrad L. Hall wanted to do Road to Perdition in black and white. And I don't know if you remember, there are some shots in that movie that would have looked gorgeous in black and white.
And let's talk about Roma, obviously, of course. Mm-hmm. Alfonso choosing to shoot in black and white. And later this year...
I did not realize until those pictures came out that Mank is going to be in black and white.
Yes, it is. It's going to be, but he'll do digital. Fincher will do digital, I'm sure.
No, that's okay. Here's the thing.
Kevin's heart just broke a little.
Just a little bit.
Whenever you say that, I feel bad for Kevin because I feel like I know that, like, deep down, a single tear rolls down his cheek.
Fincher is one of the few filmmakers who I think utilizes digital well. I mean, The Social Network makes perfect sense. Digital concept, digital storyline, digital movie. I mean, I still appreciate his film look. I mean, Fight Club, Seven, The Game, you know, those are all shot on film.
Benjamin Button would have been film, right? Button's a beautiful film.
Look like it. Gabe, can you look up his cinematographer for Mank while we move on to the...
Well, his DP that he's been using for years is a guy named Jeff Cronenworth, but I don't know.
For years, he's only done like two movies in the last 40 years.
Very true. All right, let's move on to...
Yeah.
What's that? Who?
I think Jeff Cronenworth shot a bunch of his films. I just don't know who shot Mank. I'm assuming it's him, though.
We don't have a guest this week, so we're going to go off the rails when we get to different conversations because we want to wander. We want to meander. This is going to be a meandering show for Blunders who've been following us for a long period of time.
I got to be honest, Fincher's still a little bit on my shit list right now.
Why?
Like, because he started a series... and then didn't have the time to finish it.
Oh, Manhunter.
Like, I think that is, and won't hand it off to anybody else, apparently.
Yeah.
Doesn't that bother you? Like, if you were two seasons into a show and really loved it, and then the creator was like, I'm good.
Not enough for me to be mad at him, no.
Honestly, if we get him on the show, I'm going to ask him about it.
Okay.
Yes. So before we move on to the weekly poll, I'll answer that question. The DP for Mank is Eric Messerschmidt, who you do not know... because up to this point, he's done a lot of below-the-line gaffer work. Second unit on Sicario, Day of the Soldado. So it looks like this is kind of... he did some cinematography for Raised by Wolves, that new
HBO that's a
Max
beautiful show.
Yeah,
I'm really into that show right now.
That's how he got it. He had
looks
a sizzle
like
reel.
He's pretty much... he did some Mindhunter work. So yeah,
oh,
he's
there
done
you go. That's
that,
it.
Yeah,
that's
mostly
why.
TV. Yeah.
Well, Mindhunter also looks great.
Since we mentioned his name, his name is Jeff Cronenworth. He did not shoot Mank, as you just said, but he shot Gone Girl, Social Network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Fight Club, and so on. So
it's amazing that he wouldn't just bring him back.
That's what I was a little worried about, because, I mean, he used that same guy for a long time, so.
He got fistered.
Again, I mean.
Wally
fistered. Yeah, I would say, dude, what is Fister doing now?
Nothing. Getting wrapped like we are. Okay, weekly poll, for God's sakes. We asked you guys what the best football movie of all time is, because Jake and I care the football is back. And
dude, did your fantasy team win?
No, because I didn't look. I have a running back who was questionable, and then he's a starter for the Eagles. And then I didn't check right before, and then he was out. And not only is he out, but the two best players that I have on my team are Michael Thomas for the Saints
and
Kittles for San Francisco. Oh. And they both got hurt in week one.
No idea who you guys are talking about.
I do need your advice, though, because Cam Newton's on my bench, and I need to know whether or not to play him next week.
I can confirm by the number of people that voted on this poll that no one cares about this football
talk. They don't care.
To the show.
We got 100 votes.
You know how often you guys talk about shit I don't care about? I sit here quietly and patiently.
It's often.
Like 98% of the time.
Jake, then I'm going to ask you to answer this because these are your choices for the football is back. What's the best football movie poll?
Yep.
Friday Night Lights.
Yep.
The movie, not the show.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Titans and Other.
Part of me wants to say, because there are so many football movies, that Other actually has a really good shot this week. But I think that I voted on this one, actually, because I have an opinion. And I think Friday Night Lights is the best football movie.
Kev, you have a take?
I'm going to say Other.
Remember the Titans won pretty convincingly, actually.
I like Remember the Titans. I feel like that's such a crowd pleaser, maybe. Like, remember, it did really well when it came out. But it's such a Disney-fied version of...
It really is.
Like, guys, gather around. Racism is bad.
Yeah. Was that the one where they laid in the street?
Let us set that to 70s music.
What was the one where they laid in the middle of the street while the cars were racing past them? Was that Remember the Titans?
No, that's not Remember the Titans. I don't know what that is.
Was that called The Program, maybe?
Mm,
it was also one of those generic sort of high school. So here's a movie I almost put on this poll. Just give you a little behind the scenes peek. I almost put Lucas. Would Lucas have swung the vote in any way, shape, or form? Or is that not a football movie?
What about Any Given Sunday?
No, I asked you a question. Don't answer my question with a question.
For God's sakes. No, I don't think Lucas would have swayed it.
Kevin. All right, well, there you go. So that's football talk.
What do you think? Because I think the reason I pick Friday Night Lights is because my argument has always been that a good sports movie is not about sports. It's about something bigger. And the reason I love Friday Night Lights, both the movie and the TV show, if you've never seen the show, it's one of the top five greatest TV series of all time. Something big. It's about this small town and how it crushes these young kids and how it holds on. It both crushes them and holds on to their talents until they've got nothing left.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about parents in the stands who all have state championship rings and talk about the good old days, and now their lives revolve around passing that on to the next generation. And like, these are the good old, like, I think that is such a heartbreaking movie.
There was a clip of a lady from, I want to say she was from Texas, and she was complaining about the fact that they weren't able to play high school football because of people weren't be able to gather in the stands. Maybe it wasn't Texas, because I think Texas allows people to do that now. And she said, essentially, instead of sitting in the stands on Friday night, cheering on the team like I want to do, I had to be in a bar, drowning my sorrows. Now, that's no way for a mom to act. So that was so great. All right, wait, I want to run a test. If I ask you to tell me the one line that comes to mind when I mention Varsity Blues, which got the most mentions in the Other, what's the one line that comes to mind?
10. Fucking 10.
No, that's not what I was going to say.
That's what I said.
That was yours? I don't want your life.
I don't want your life.
I don't
want your life.
Well, that's what I figured when you were telling me about the people in the stands who were cheering on their kids.
I always think of Billy Bob. 10. Fucking 10.
Isn't that great? Wait. Isn't that the same actor who showed up in none of the teen movie?
Yeah, he plays the same character.
He played the spoof version of himself.
Yeah. Not Another Teen Movie is a masterpiece, and I don't care what anyone says, that movie is brilliant. Like, it is brilliant.
Hey, remember when we used to do commentaries?
Yeah, that would be a fun one. Jake, I we're not going to get into this on the show, but remember our Ali Larter Varsity Blues experience?
One of my all-time great celebrity stories.
Saved by the Bell.
I tell that story at dinner.
That's a premium.
We should... It wouldn't have fallen under the umbrella of, like, bad interview moments, but we should do an episode about, like, awkward celebrity encounters, because I have some good ones too.
They have nothing
to do with interviews.
Is a very quick tease. Jake and I were at this. This is gonna sound so braggish.
This is the best story ever.
Party with Mark Paul Gosselaar, played Zach in Saved by the Bell, and Ali Larter showed up, and there was an awkward interaction. That's all I'm gonna say.
And I tried to save Kevin from it. I did.
I didn't do anything wrong.
You had to know how badly that was going to work out.
Okay, let's take a moment now to shift into talking points. And this is a topic that we've been having this conversation in the text chain. I almost don't even want to bring it into the show, but we kind of have to. More movies are getting delayed. And I kind of feel like we've been having this conversation about that Tenet seemed to be the type of movie where people tested it to see, like, are people ready to come back? It's not doing quite as well as we wanted to. And the studios, well, Warner Brothers in particular, and then some of the other studios around it are panicking and getting out of 2020. And I personally believe, the guys may disagree, but I don't think we're going to see anything else open in 2020. Because the big ones that have just shifted as we were heading up to the recording of this show, Wonder Woman 1984 pushes back to Christmas Day from October 2nd. Now, Warner Brothers at the time said that Dune is going to stay where it is on the 18th of December, but that makes no sense from a business perspective at all. Why would Warner Brothers compete with themselves with two massive blockbusters?
Also, Wonder Woman's an IMAX film.
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman's going to be playing in certain types of theaters that Doom would also require.
Yeah.
Remember, like, these movies, nowadays, if you look at, like, for example, A Quiet Place Part 2, look at the poster for that film. On the bottom of the poster, it says Dolby Theaters. They promote early on what theaters it's going to be in. So I don't think it's even possible that Wonder Woman and Doom could open at the same time.
Kevin, let me ask you, with everything that's going on, does that sort of, like, throw those contracts up in the air? Because you look at, like, the IMAX here in Chicago, like, just not open. So Tenet didn't play there. Like, do you think that, like, with everything going on, that, I mean, like, is there like an act of God clause in any of those contracts where they go, like, look, like, there's nothing we can do about it? Because there's no guarantee that even if these movies were to open, that IMAX would be available.
Well, generally speaking, again, and this is speaking in very broad terms, when a film is released, if you notice all the pushbacks, everything's pushed back to a certain date so that it could stay within a window and still utilize the theaters it needs to utilize, right?
Sure.
So, like, for example, I always go to Skyfall. Skyfall is a great example where IMAX was a partner on that film. Deakins actually shot outside of his aspect ratio, the normal ratio, so he could get 26% more of the image. That way, when it plays in IMAX, they can say, oh, it's in IMAX, even though it wasn't really shot with IMAX cameras. So in that sense, yes, there are films that actually make contracts with the theaters and IMAX and whatever the other companies would be to run within a certain period of time. So to answer your question about IMAX, Jake, Tenet is still running through its IMAX contract. It's still playing in IMAX theaters across the country. Now, if certain IMAXs aren't open, like mine in the area, the Lockheed Martin or the Udvar-Hazy, the Air and Space Museums, I don't think that nullifies, if that's the word, the AMC IMAXs. Like, Tenet's still, like, they're not going to shove another movie in Tenet's place right now. I would assume Tenet has a certain agreement of time. I don't know for sure, but I think that's what it is.
But, okay, and this is in my head related. It might sound weird, but, like, you think when a massive blockbuster comes out, there are all these contractual obligations that they have, and a lot of them are different, like, crazy, weird promotional opportunities one way or the other. You go to a grocery store right now and you pick up a bag of Doritos and all of them have Wonder Woman on it. So wasted all of that? I mean, like, I can't imagine Doritos is going to come back. And because let's be honest, Wonder Woman's probably not going to come out this year. So let's say it gets pushed to, in theory, next summer.
Sure.
Like, is that money just blown? Like, does Doritos get to come back and be like, look, we did our part. Like, we put Wonder Woman on our bag.
Yeah, because that stuff has to be done in advance.
Oh, 100%.
So far. Absolutely. That's, I never thought about that. Because the other types of contracts that are in play that have to get altered are these day and date, you know, how long you could be in a theater versus when you can go to paid VOD. And look at how we've seen that change over the past couple of months. So to continue to build on that, Wonder Woman currently right now is on Christmas Day. Dune says it's the 18th, but we all expect that to move.
I don't see how that's possible. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, maybe Dune.
You don't see how it's possible that it's going to move, or it's possible that they're both going to come out?
That they could be in December.
Oh, they're not going to. They're absolutely not going to.
Now, here's the thing. There is a theoretical way this could work. I mean, Dune could have just the Dolby theaters, right? And then maybe Wonder Woman gets the IMAX theaters because it's the same studio. I don't know how that's going to work. I just don't see a way that both of them are going to open at the same time under whatever obligations they have. That's not going to happen.
You never see a studio open the two of their biggest titles near each other. They would. I think one of the things that's holding up Dune is they just don't know what weekend they would push it to in 2021. Because right now, 2021, the problem with that is that it's just stacked. It's stacked from wall to wall from things that have already been pushed back. And so there's another couple of big titles that are due. And we're not even going to get into this one right now, but I'm looking at Bond.
Like, I don't think we get Bond in November. Because I don't think theaters will be able to last until Bond comes out. If Tenet's not making money and they have no new movies to bring people in, they're hemorrhaging while staying open right now. I don't think theaters are going to be open by the time November comes around.
Bond is a very interesting one because Bond is a international film.
Yeah,
it's right. more of a Europe. It's more of a European. If you look at Skyfall and the box office numbers for Bond films, I believe
Spectre did great overseas.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you run into the whole piracy thing all over again.
I know. So my question is, if you're Bond and other countries are doing better than we are United States wise, and Tenet did very well internationally. It just didn't do well in the United States because of for clarification, New York, LA, and San Francisco are not open. Right. Those are three of the biggest movie markets in the country, and we're only 25 to 40% capacity. So I don't think box office numbers for Tenet in the U.S.
Within the realm of what's happening in the world, they're saying Tenet's going to close between $300, $400 million worldwide. I think that's pretty damn impressive. In the middle of a freaking worldwide pandemic to make between $300 and $400 million worldwide,
right.
I don't understand why that's being written off as a failure.
And that's the thing, and I kind of feel bad for Tenet in the sense that I truly believe that Christopher Nolan and Warner Bros. Intentions were to help bring back theaters, to employ the theater companies, and to bring the people back to theaters in a safest way possible. It just didn't work out in the United States as well as they wanted to, because you don't have in New York and LA. You're losing millions of dollars by not opening up the theaters in New York and LA. So I think going back to the Bond question, though, here's where it gets interesting. Tenet did very well internationally. It is doing very well internationally. If you're Bond and your brand is more international than it is domestic, do you still open? Because is Bond really a movie you can spoil?
Yeah, his last one.
I mean,
I agree with Kevin in that sense. I think people who want to see it are going to see it regardless. You know, I want to see the set pieces. I will still go see his final run as Bond. It doesn't matter if you tell me what the end of it is.
But I would make the argument that his Bond movies are the only ones that have a real linear serial storyline. All the other Bond movies are just they're episodic. If this were, a Pierce Brosnan, I'd be like, yeah, sure. Like, it's just another Bond movie. Okay. But like, I actually genuinely am very curious as to how they're going. Cause I think that there is going to be a sense of finality to Daniel Craig's Bond story.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'd rather not have that ruined for me.
Stupid question. Cause I have admittedly not seen every Bond movie. Have they ever killed Bond?
I brought this up on the air the other day and people ripped into me. I think they might in this one.
No.
But why not? Because like in the theory, in the same way that like Nolan killed Batman, everyone knows Bond's going to come back. But if we are admitting as an audience that Daniel Craig's Bond, this is his one Bond story, why couldn't they kill him? Why couldn't he make the ultimate sacrifice? And with the obvious knowledge that he's going to come back in 5 years, why couldn't we? I think they should.
By the way, I've been doing a lot of watching of older films during the pandemic, and I'd never seen it before. I watched The Spy Who Loved Me for the first time over the weekend, the Roger Moore film.
Oh.
That is one of the most insane action films I have. Have you guys seen The Spy Who Loved Me?
I don't think so.
I'm telling you right now, it is one of the most insane and relentless action films I've ever seen. All right, this is the only thing I'm going to say about Skyfall, because I think this feeds into what we're talking about here, Sean.
Yeah.
So Skyfall box office, $1.1 billion for Skyfall box office, okay?
It's great.
304 was domestic. 804 million was international. So if you're a studio and you look at those numbers, do you put it out internationally?
I mean, I think you do. I think you do. Because I also fear partially what Jake is saying,
piracy.
Which is that I don't think theaters are going to be open. Like I would love for them to say, Wonder Woman moved and Candyman moved. We're going to go to October and we're just going to play through October, November. Just jump forward. You're done. It's done. You know, I don't even know how much pressure you have to do for it. So just move it up and put it out, because I'm of the mindset that theaters need to be figuring out how to operate. And the only way they can do that is if they have content that's driving people in.
Yeah.
So that they can juggle audiences.
Empire Strikes Back ain't gonna last. Yeah,
no, of course not.
They don't have anything now until, technically speaking, the next big movie that's supposed to open would be Black Widow, technically, right?
From all right, so, okay, right. Great transition. Kev,
yeah, I got nice your back, man. Job. I got your back.
He's,
your
a back. Man of television.
The I got rumors your back. That were coming around right as we came into this, though none of this is confirmed, though we're starting to see reports, and maybe it'll happen before you guys even listen to this, is that Black Widow is looking at new dates. We don't know when, and I'll talk a little bit about the ramifications about that in a second, but the other shoe to drop with that one is that Pixar's film Soul might theoretically get pushed to VOD because, and here's where, when we keep talking about how the rules of the traditional way that things get released are out the window, a Pixar film, a new Pixar film going to streaming.
Onward basically did the same thing.
I know. And basically, what I'm saying is, like, prior to all of this, that would have just been, we would never have considered the possibility of something like that happening. But now with Disney having a streaming service that they can push things to, now that they've tested the boundaries of having a premium service where people could pay, and we don't know how Mulan did, and I don't know if they're ever going to release those numbers.
Why don't we know that information?
Because it didn't do that well.
It's the Netflix model. They only tell you when they have reason to celebrate.
But
I
this
think.
Is a different story. This is like a very easy metric to figure out. Who purchased?
Yeah, but a metrics that only they... Oh, I'm not saying that they can't figure it out. I'm saying they have figured it out and don't want us to know.
They don't
want to
share it.
But like Netflix is different because with Netflix, it's all about like how much you watch, and that can be all taken into different considerations. Sure. This is a simple who purchased it for $30.
Exactly. And it sounds like not that many people.
I mean, it seems interesting to me. I also feel like, and if Disney Plus is listening to us, you should have an option that you can prove you're the only person living at your house. That does that make sense to me? Like,
how so?
If you are single, why are you spending $30 on a movie? It makes sense for like.
Well,
other
I mean, but
people.
You could make that argument. What about like Netflix? Like what if it's there's five people watching Netflix at home versus like it's just me in my home? Like we're paying
but
the same amount.
$9 a month or whatever it
is. Yeah, but
it
was still the same idea. You're talking about like paying less because you're the only one to watch it. Okay, but I do want to shift to my big question that I really want your opinion on.
Ooh.
Within the next 30 days, does Tenet come out on VOD?
No.
No.
Will not happen.
If the numbers continue to be lackluster, you don't think Warner Brothers would put it out there for $30 a pop?
No, I guarantee you that movie has the 90-day window.
We don't know if theaters are going to be open for 90 days, dude.
I'm not saying theaters are going to be open for 90 days. I'm saying that I guarantee you the contract for that film. Hmm. Remember, Universal Pictures, we had that whole ordeal happen with Trolls. Sure, didn't they shorten their window to 17 days or whatever it was, whatever the time frame was. If again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know anything about the legality of how this stuff works. I would imagine if Tenet already came out that it has to conform to the 90 days. I'm not sure.
Interesting. Gabe?
Just to give my prediction, I think what's going to happen is Tenet will be in theater. Tenet will be the last. I agree with Sean. Tenet will be the last major release that we see this year. And I think Tenet will remain in theaters until they're forced to close again, which it feels like that's going to happen, especially if no new movies are coming. And then it'll go to VOD as soon as they can after that.
So,
similar to the Onward situation. I think as soon as there's no more theaters for it to be in, I think Warner Brothers shifts and they try to make a VOD run.
All right, now that's a good point. So if the theaters are forced to close...
That's why I'm asking this question.
Well, no, the question you asked was just generally in 30 days.
Yeah, but the reason I'm asking that is because I don't think theaters are going to be around in 30 days.
Kev, I want to go back to a point that you bring up, which is that because there's a lot of people who I think haven't been able to get to a theater to see Tenet, they're probably really hungry to check it out and they wonder when they're going to get an opportunity to. You say you honestly don't think it's going to go to paid VOD within the next 30 days. Do you think that that's a Nolan thing? Do you think he's holding hard and fast about it going to paid VOD?
I don't really know. I mean, I would, again, we all know that Nolan is preserving the theatrical experience. So I would imagine that he does not want his film going to VOD. I can't speak for him. I'm not sure. I just know how much he appreciates the theatrical experience, but we're in a very different time. So, I mean, here's the thing. We've all discussed this in the show before. I think Netflix's model in regards to how they do theatrical and then their release on streaming is more of a reasonable, futuristic way to look at things. If you're going to give a movie a 2-week run or a 3-week run initially in theaters so that you force the theatrical viewing, then you give them the option for streaming. I mean, listen, I want movies to play in theaters as long as they can. in a normal state, you know, outside of a pandemic, obviously. But I think that you can't deny the future we're headed into. You can't deny it. It's not possible to not think of streaming. So in my opinion, you make a compromise, exactly how Netflix did. Throw Roma into a theater a couple weeks before it comes out. Irishman into a theater a couple weeks before it comes out on Netflix. And then you go see it that way.
And Netflix doesn't charge you extra to watch it.
Right.
It's just part of your subscription.
Right. And I think, you know, in my opinion, to Jake's question, which is very interesting, if theaters remain open in the next 30 days, I can't see it going to paid VOD. If theaters close within the next 30 days, I can see Warner Brothers forcing that to a paid VOD at that point. Because at this point, the movie has to make its money back. And it's becoming, has to be a business decision at this point. I mean, it has to be. I mean, they gave Nolan his theatrical run. It had its time. And for me, I wanted to keep going in theaters safely. But I also think that if theaters do shut down, Jake could be right. It could go to PVOD in 15 days if theaters shut down.
Would do very well on PVOD.
So too. Oh, it would crush. Yeah,
now,
it would crush.
I have one request if anyone at Warner Bros. Is listening to this. If you put the film on paid VOD, please put the aspect ratio shifts in the digital version.
You're gonna ask because for subtitles.
Also subtitles, please.
Subtitles.
If you guys remember, we had Damien Chazelle on the show, who was trying to watch Dunkirk, and he was trying to get Nolan's IMAX aspect ratio shifts, but the iTunes version of it didn't keep those IMAX shifts in it. So you have to go to the Blu-ray. Like, I pop on Dunkirk once a week just to watch those IMAX shifts upstairs. And for me, that's the way Tenet should be seen. So if that's possible, anybody at Warner Bros. Is listening to us, please keep the IMAX aspect ratio shifts in your digital release.
You know what's crazy is that, like, you say, oh, when we had Damien Chazelle on the show, there was a moment when I was like, when the hell did we have Damien Chazelle on the show? Like, but, it's all a blur now, man.
But to be honest with you, that was, like, the coolest thing ever when Damien Chazelle said that, because I was like, dude, you're, like, you literally watch films like we do. Yeah, like the fact that you're, like, renting Dunkirk on iTunes and not getting your IMAX shots that you want.
And complaining about the aspect ratio.
You sound just like us. You know, that's exactly how.
You know, he modeled Fletcher in Whiplash after Gabe. You know that shot of Fletcher in Whiplash when he's like.
Yeah, that was Gabe rapping.
That's he modeled him after.
I actually did. I did 2 weeks of mocap.
And it's just him going.
Yeah.
But to tell you how anal I am about that, like Tron Legacy, for example, is on Disney Plus right upstairs. I still walk down here to rent to get my Blu-ray because the Blu-ray has the IMAX.
I like that you said to rent it. You got to rent it for your basement.
I rent.
He charges himself.
I honestly might create a system down here and get like rental cards.
But please hire somebody. Please, I want you to hire someone for your basement.
I'll hire Quentin Tarantino. He'll come in and run video archives in my basement.
Okay. What do you like?
Okay. Honestly, man, like? That'd be really cool to like rent out films.
Having Quentin Tarantino in your basement?
Yeah, that'd be cool too.
Or super deflating if he comes down and in your there's piles and he's like, I'm throwing all that out.
He's like, not another team movie. What the hell is this?
Oh, I think he loves that movie.
I have a feeling he likes that movie.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, Nolan's a big MacGruber fan.
Yeah, he loves MacGruber. Yeah,
these filmmakers love the random stuff that we do.
Not to ask him about that.
I know. What are we doing with our lives?
We wasted our time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's get to news that's not related to things that aren't coming and talk about. OK, so Jonathan Majors, who I loved from Defy Bloods and was we did a video on Cinema Blend earlier talking about his casting. as Kang the Conqueror in the Ant-Man, the third Ant-Man that doesn't have a title yet, Ant-Man 3. And it's a major character to bring into the MCU. He has Thanos level potential as a villain and could be a huge move going forward into phase 4 and phase 5. But you two are watching Lovecraft Country. Are you both watching it?
I've watched the first episode. I haven't had a chance to progress further just because it's been, I think we've all been just so swamped lately with things we have to watch for junkets. But I thought it was great in that first episode.
Okay. He's a significant character. He's going to be
He's arguably the main character.
Okay. Yeah, him and Journey Smollett-Bell are the first episode is outstanding.
Okay.
Like, outstanding. Like, and I think Jake and I were talking about this at one point. Like, the horrors in that show are, like, not even from the monsters. It's from the elements of racism that the characters are dealing with. But Jonathan Majors, he was in The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which was great. He was amazing. Five Bloods, I thought was a big leading performance for him, even though it was supporting. He was a big part of that film, right?
Absolutely.
Because he was a huge part of that film.
And he holds his own with so many great character actors, and he's playing Delroy Lindo's son in that film, and doesn't shy away from huge scenes with Delroy, who has given one of the best performances of this year.
I hope people don't forget about him when the Oscar...
Oh, yeah, like that scene alone is tremendous.
The landmine scene was unbelievable. Sorry, Jake, what did you say?
No, I was going to say, I hope people don't forget about Delroy Lindo when Oscar nominations come around.
Well, there's no other movies. So this has been like 10 movies this year. Yeah, but
I feel like, Netflix is, I feel like we're starting to, stuff from Toronto's starting to come out. We're starting to hear things. Yeah. The trailer for that new Anthony Hopkins movie, The Father, dropped, and a lot of people start saying that he is a major contender for Best Actor.
I heard Regina King's movie is amazing.
Yeah,
I've heard, Miami. Yeah. That looks. What's the plot on that again? It's like.
It's like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King,
Muhammad
it's like
Ali.
One night,
Muhammad
it's
Ali, a, like all, like all, like are just Sam happen to be Cook, hanging out
I
together.
Think Sam Cooke is the.
Oh,
other
you're
character.
Talking about one. Sorry, I tuned out. You're talking about One Night in Miami.
I'm sorry, you tuned out.
Yeah,
I have.
Aren't you the producer of the show?
Yeah, I'm pulling. I'm spinning plates, pulling cords. I gotta open this curtain.
What is it about? One Night in Miami. Do you know?
Thanks for joining us.
I don't know if I can give the quick pitch, but yes, it's Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X. And a couple other historical
Sam
figures.
Sam Cooke, I think, is one of them.
Sam Cooke.
I'm looking it up.
And it's about them. It's Muhammad Ali has a big fight. I forget who he's fighting. And it's the night following that. And it's them, like, celebrating that. And they get into this stuff. I don't know too much about it because I'm so sold on it that I've, like...
Yeah. Well, you've talked about that's how you... Once you're sold on a movie...
Yeah, I try to. Stuff that I know, like, I don't need to pitch stuff on.
So, while you guys looking up the plot of it, Jonathan Majors gets cast in a major Marvel film... It's weird that they're introducing this potentially major villain in Ant-Man 3.
Does that mean that he could potentially like not die in the film?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that they'd be setting him up for a huge role, like a significant role down the line. In fact, it was almost floated today in a video that we recorded that he might be just behind the scenes pulling the strings of whoever the villain ends up being.
Interesting.
Kind of thing. But also Kang from the books, to get super nerdy, can manipulate time. He's known for time travel, and so he is a villain in the far distant future, like the 31st century.
Sure.
He also goes way, way back into the past in order to conquer the planet.
Wait, is this Tenet?
This is Kang, the Marvel villain. Yes, he inverts. And it's possible that the Avengers traveling through time in Endgame might have awakened him or opened some type of portal that will allow him to come up. The only thing that gets frustrating is, like, it's great casting. I think he's going to be amazing. It's cool that they're moving forward with Ant-Man 3. But if we can't get Black Widow, everything from the Marvel Universe is going to have to bump back another.
You're just gonna wait.
Like, they have 7 or 8 movies that are all going to have to do a centipede move, you know, down the line.
Sure.
And so we'll see whenever that
happens.
Do
you think Marvel likes characters that can alter time because it gives them potential to... undo
retcon
things they've done or bring back character, like, you know, like, let's say, I mean, I know Downey said that, like, in theory, like, he's done with Iron Man, but let's say that, like, in 8 or 9 years and Kang's like a major, like, Thanos like player of the MCU, do you think that they like sort of having people that can mess with time because it leaves open a door to potentially convince actors that left to come back?
Yeah, for sure. But the other thing that they're gonna introduce in Doctor Strange is the multiverse. And
that's interesting.
You could have multiverse versions of other characters. And that's where you would get like an Iron Man suit with a different character or a Captain America who is.
Well, so, and with DC doing it with the Flash and all the different Batman. Feels weird saying Batman, but all the different Batman. Then I think right now Marvel is either they were already planning on doing it and thinking shit, Like, but if they weren't, now they absolutely are thinking about doing it. And then I brought it up with Tom Holland at the Spider-Man junket, and he was like, of course, absolutely, he wants to do a Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield.
That would make so much money.
Oh, it would make all the monies.
For one movie, if they got those three together for one movie, it would be, you'd give Andrew Garfield a chance to finish the franchise. Yeah.
Would Tobey come back?
What is he doing now?
Count his money. Count all his poker money.
Great Gatsby 3.
He's Seabiscuit.
Wait, what happened to Great Gatsby 2? Why was he not in 2?
They just skipped 2.
Did you guys know? Do you know the whole deal with Tobey Maguire and Molly's Game?
Yeah. He's the actor.
He's the guy that they portray as being just a total jerk.
Which one is Affleck?
And a card shark junkie. Like, he and Leo would do these private poker games.
But specifically, allegedly. Michael Cera plays him in Molly's Game, but Michael Cera is basically playing Tobey Maguire.
Who is Affleck? Was Affleck one of those guys too?
He might have been one of, but the guy that they're specifically addressing as like DiCaprio. This celebrity was an asshole.
Tobey Maguire
is Tobey Maguire.
Yeah,
I was thinking of DiCaprio.
Doesn't take away.
He and DiCaprio were big buddies back in the day. Yeah.
Doesn't take away the brilliance of the Ocean's.
Oh, I love that scene.
Ocean's 11
all
scene.
All reds.
Where he's teaching those guys.
But that's
to play
not
poker.
That's not Tobey Maguire.
No. That's Topher Grace. He's in Spider-Man 3, though. He's Venom.
Yeah,
he's Venom.
They're Spider-Man. They're both Spider-Man.
They're all Spider guys. Yeah. Yikes. Thanks for backing me up there, Gabe. All right. So while we were getting ready to record, news broke. That's so surreal that we're not quite sure how to process it. There's going to be a Madonna biopic.
Oh.
Biopic? But I still don't know how to pronounce that.
Biopic.
And she is going to write it. She's going to write her own biopic. She's going to direct it, and I swear to you, this has not been confirmed, but I'm telling you, this is coming. She's going to star in it.
No,
she's
no
absolutely going to
no
play
way.
Herself.
I told you guys.
It needs to be someone that looks like Madonna.
It doesn't
it's
matter.
It's going to be Irishman, DH. They're going to DH.
Or not even. It'll be like that Bob Dylan one, where like everybody played different versions of her, but it'll just be her.
But it's just her playing different versions of her.
Yes, her playing different versions of her. Like, but like it'll be like young Madonna at school. Yeah. It'll be all little kids, but like her now. Like playing.
Okay, here's a question. What Madonna song title do they use as the title of the movie? Material Girl?
Like a Virgin.
Like a Virgin?
I think that's a great title.
Because you know it's going to be in a Madonna song title.
Yeah, it's going to have to be a title. But I feel
like
it's
a Virgin.
You think?
I think
5 Minutes
a good
to
title.
Save the World?
Does that she have a song named that?
Isn't there a song?
It's got to be Material Girl. I guess I think
it's
got to
be Material
Girl.
It's not going to be Like a Virgin. I think it's going to be Material Girl.
The only reason I said Like a Virgin is because that's the first song that pops in my mind because
of Reservoir
Dogs.
Right. It's not going to be that.
I know, but
Material Girl sounds like a really bad like late 2000s.
I'm sorry. What do you think this movie is going to be? It's not going to be Citizen Kane, man.
Diablo Cody, but like wrote it. I think
she's co-writing. She's co-writing it with Madonna. So basically, I feel like Madonna's going to write it and Dale Bacody's gonna punch it up.
Gonna fix it?
No, yeah. I don't. I think it's the other way around. I think
you think,
Madonna's
gonna punch
saying,
it up?
No, I think
no,
Diablo
I think,
will
no,
write it
no,
and
no,
then
no.
she'll give.
I think Madonna is supplying the scenes that she wants to depict, and Diablo Cody is making them fun for a movie.
Yeah,
but either way, I find That's this all to be very, very fascinating. It, I love that we're getting to the stage of the game where our 80s icons are starting to get their biopic treatment, and because Prince should be next. Springsteen probably should be next. Like, there's some huge artists.
Who
from
could
the 80s.
Play Prince?
Well, let's look at Madonna's top song title.
Dave Chappelle.
Into the Groove.
That's the best.
It's got to be Material Girl.
I was going to say
man.
Kevin Hart.
I will put money down that it's. I will take odds on Material Girl.
Oh, Into the Groove is not bad.
Into the Groove. How about Take a Bow? Material Girl. Deeper and Deeper is not going to work. Don't Tell Me is not going to work. Holiday is not going to work. Borderline, Beautiful Stranger. That's a good.
That's a good one.
That's a really good
title. Or Express Yourself. That's a great title.
I can
Express
honestly tell you, we're putting more thought into this
than she ever will. It's just gonna be called Madonna.
But if they do the Irishman model, could they call it A Star Is DH'd?
Yikes!
They could if they want to.
Yikes!
I feel like Madonna is like. Edgy enough where she would go with Like a Virgin for a title. I know it's not like, I think it's a good title.
I mean, so many other better ones though. Express Yourself is really good.
Express Yourself. Vogue.
Those
would be
all sound so vanilla though.
Do you think that, like her concerts, Madonna's the release is going to be delayed?
Biopic?
How about like a Prayer?
A Vanilla Ice biopic?
Hey, they're doing a Vanilla Ice biopic.
Yeah, what's his name is playing him?
Dave Franco's playing him.
But yeah. He's going to have to be in the Madonna biopic. Like, I'm actually more curious to cinematic see, universe. Like, who's going to be other characters. Like, there's some really significant sure. people. Who's going to be Guy Ritchie? Lady?
Oh, who's going to be Guy Ritchie?
That's true.
The entire film that Madonna's making is about the making of Swept Away.
Swept Away.
That's the entire movie is about the making of film.
There are significant eras in her career actually have to be covered. Like, it's kind of, there's like, a lot of material to work with, and I'm not kidding.
There's a lot of material, girl to work with.
God, the show is over.
But
I'm sorry. Like, how come it's always over when I do these? I'm giving you gold.
They are painful when I don't use them. When I don't say them, they hurt more.
Were there any famous filmmakers who directed her videos? Did Fincher do one of her videos?
I thought Jonathan Demme did.
Demme?
Jonathan Demme did some of her early... Like that a Prayer, sounds
right.
I thought was...
That sounds right.
I thought Like a Prayer was directed by somebody really famous. The one with
She's
the burning
had
crosses
famous
and...
filmmakers direct her. Fincher didn't do one, did he?
I don't think so. Anyway, all right. The last thing we're getting to in talking points is the Mandalorian trailer reaction. And I thought that was a outstanding trailer. Too short, unfortunately, but it feels like it's getting into the myth and the lore of Star Wars in a really significant time in ways that, and I'm not doing this to throw that trilogy under the bus in a way that the sequel trilogy didn't manage to do so. Almost in a Rogue One kind of way. It's cool to see that universe expanding with characters that we are committed to at this point now, thanks to a full season. And maybe that's the episodic nature of it. But Mandalorian looks amazing. Like, the armor looks great. The relationships are already formed with the child. Jakey is our resident Star Wars guy. A+.
Yeah, I liked the first season, but I'm on record as saying I didn't love it. The big reason being, for a season that was only 8 episodes, and many of those episodes were only 30 minutes apiece, there were way too many episodes that in the grand scheme of the story didn't matter. When you're only doing 8 30 to 40 minute episodes, every single one of those should matter to the story. And there were way too many of them that didn't. It seems like now we're kind of getting into the thick of what this story is going to be. And I also, I'm pulling a Gabe in that I kind of don't want to see anything else. Like, I'm kind of good. I'm glad that they didn't show Boba Fett. I'm glad they didn't show Ahsoka. I'm kind of just, like, I'm good. I'm teased. I'm jacked. And we're what? We're a month away from it coming out. So, like, I don't need to see anymore. I'm good. Like, I'm sold. I'm into it.
Is Rosario Dawson actually Ahsoka Tano?
Yeah.
Is she really? Yeah. That's amazing. I thought that was like a fan fiction rumor.
But to me, the casting, the fact that they brought back, and I'm forgetting the actor's name, but the actor to play Boba Fett makes perfect sense. Because, you know, Boba Fett.
Confirmed as a character?
Yes.
See, I haven't paid attention to what they're doing with Mandalorian.
And do you know the guy that played Jango Fett?
Yeah.
In Attack of the Clones,
right,
is playing Boba Fett in The Mandalorian.
I did
because
hear that.
It's the whole deal that Boba Fett was a, like, he wanted a clone because they were all making clones of him.
Yeah.
And he wanted one as a son. So in theory.
Yes.
That kid would grow up to look like him.
That's kind of cool.
So it's perfect casting.
Were the clones being attacked?
They were. It was called Attack of the Clones.
You know, I think we do need guests on this show.
By the way, David Fincher directed the Vogue video.
God damn it.
Did he?
Isn't that cool?
Being wrong.
Black and white.
Well, then you must hate it a lot. So moving to Devil All the Time.
Mandalorian, I just want to say the trailer is amazing.
Okay,
that's all I wanted to say. I mean, you guys, Jake hit everything that, you know, but it's a great trailer, great teaser. I was very excited about it. And again, a show that normalizes and uses practical effects as much as they can. Baby
I feel
Yoda.
Like they are spending more money on this season too. It looks better.
It looks huge.
I laughed hard at the Baby Yoda like pressing the button. I laughed hard at that.
And you know why I was really happy about that? Because it reminded me, like, it remembered to be funny and entertaining. Like, it didn't have to be like serious doom and gloom.
Yeah,
the child's in trouble.
I want to give a shout out to Pedro Pascal, though. That performance he does in that mask is unbelievable. Like, every emotional beat, even though we don't see any, it's all in the shrugs or the way he, like, turns his head.
Yep.
That is so fascinating to me.
But we found out, didn't we find out that he mostly does VO, though, and it's a different guy who...
Is it really?
It's not, I don't know if I read that it's mostly, but there's a lot of times where it's not him.
Yeah.
A lot. Okay.
A huge. A lot of time.
I'll take mostly out of it. I don't know for sure if it's mostly, but I know I remember that being a story there was one episode where I forget which actor they were talking to where she was like, "Oh yeah, I never met him. I never met Pedro Pascal. Yeah. I worked with
him." It's Kevin, I'll tell you, it's him a lot less than you think it is.
That bothers me actually. Then.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, because he's great. His VO is great.
His VO is great.
But the body language is why I think the performance is great.
Yeah, they're working together.
I mean,
kudos to whoever that guy is.
Who is that person? Let's get that person on the show.
I forget, but yeah.
They asked Pedro if he'd do it, and he said, "Paid no."
It's actually Leonardo DiCaprio is in a suit.
That actually kind of gives me a little negativity on the performance. What?
Sean. I didn't know you didn't know that.
You didn't hear my bad joke.
Sean. I'm sorry. Mine bothered you, but that clears the O'Connell. Sorry.
No, it wasn't up to snuff either. It was really bad.
That was terrible. Bad.
We do need guests on this show. In a really bad way. All right. This week in movies. You guys saw Antebellum. Tell me about it.
Yes.
It looks really interesting. It looks like a great premise.
I don't want to give too much away because it kind of like the best part of the movie is like a moment in which everything kind of the puzzle pieces come together.
Okay.
But my biggest knock of this movie is that it is a premise that is horribly wasted.
Oh.
It so badly wants to be the next Get Out, and that it uses the genre of horror to have a bigger societal conversation about race and specifically and racism. But it doesn't, by the time the movie's over, it doesn't, like, here's the deal, is that Get Out yields so many different conversations that you can have. To me, Antebellum yields the conversation of racism is bad and slavery is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was wrong. I gotta be honest with you, I was into the movie for a while. Like I kind of thought like, okay. And then I just felt like it just dropped the ball unlike any movie I've seen in a long time. And I just felt like it was one of the biggest missed opportunities I have seen. We always talk about like remake movies that were bad, like cool. Yeah. Like this would be a great movie in 20 years. I wish someone would take this idea and retry it again because it's such a brilliant idea that is so blatantly wasted by a guy who didn't, by a writer who I think didn't really know what he wanted to say with the movie.
Okay. Are you able to at least explain to me why the trailer has shots of them in present
I'd
day?
I'd rather not because I feel like that ruins Kevin. I mean,
So that's actually what I was about to say. So the trailer gives away the whole thing.
Really?
So it's not a spoiler technically to mention it. I did not know anything about it. So my experience, Jake, did you know about the twist?
I knew. So what the trailer? I think the trailer's fair to talk about.
The trailer gives
it
away, though.
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't connect the two. So the trailer shows. No, it doesn't. It doesn't show how. So
all
the trailer shows.
I've seen some of them like out at a club.
Yes.
And then I see them on what looks like a plantation.
Yeah, the trailer shows like sort of. Well, no, I guess the new trailer, because there's a new trailer came out that does sort of reveal what
gives.
So I guess
away.
I don't know. Do you mean to tell you?
Nah, well, that's okay. That's okay. You don't have to. I may watch it.
Let me say this. So my particular perspective on this film was not knowing the trailer, and I liked the film. So I wonder if the trailer,
but I didn't. The trailer that we're talking about, Kevin, I didn't see till after I saw the movie.
No, the trailer I'm referring to is the first one they released.
Okay,
but you liked it.
You think it works?
I liked the film. But I had no idea where it was going. So when the film opened, I thought it was one movie, and then when it shifted to what it was gonna be. It was a completely different. I mean, I was shocked because I had absolutely no idea. So I think this is an interesting case here where if you know going in what the twist is, then I don't know that it's going to be as shocking.
No, because it wasn't like because I liked the twist. I think the twist is really interesting. I just think that everything surrounding the twist is not good. And I didn't really know what all I knew was that there were modern day elements of the movie, and I knew that there were elements of slavery on a plantation.
Is it a horror movie?
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's disturbing, very
I didn't
disturbing.
Know what genre it was.
The producers of Get Out and Us produced it, so I'll say this without giving anything away because I feel like people should see it without seeing the trailer if you can. Because Jake brings up interesting points because I do think it does fall apart towards the end, but it is super engaging up through maybe that third act. Because
I thought the last 15 minutes were laughable, man. I thought, like, to the point where like I was just like, what is this? Like, what did this movie become?
I wouldn't say laughable. I just felt like the movie kind of goes off the rails. Like it almost forgets its pacing and kind of how it was well paced throughout. And it's shot incredibly well.
Oh, tell the story about Gone with the Wind.
Well, Jake, you say it, because basically Jake and I both did the press junket for it. And we learned that the lenses that were used in the film were the lenses that were used on Gone with the Wind. And Jake, you talked about the idea that this was to retcon.
So obviously, especially within the last few months, Gone with the Wind has been back in the news because people have sort of brought up the fact that, like, there are a lot of aspects that just don't particularly age well. Mm-hmm. You know, that movie is very much a product of its time and it has to be viewed as such. So the directors of the film is two directors, they actually tracked down the actual lenses that were used to shoot Gone with the Wind to shoot this film as in sort of a spiritual course correction.
That's interesting.
Which I thought was really a really interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. And I thought Janelle Monáe was excellent in it. Their performance that Jack Houston gives is terrifying. Like he's great in the film.
That's so interesting. Yeah, to me he's like the cliche, like, plantation, like, overlord guy.
Yeah, I mean, again, to Jake's point, he fits the description Jake's referring to because he's playing into it, if that makes sense. Yeah. Jake, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Give me a star rating. Star ratings? Do you guys have star ratings on him?
Out of five? You're asking two and a half.
I'd give it a 3.5.
3.5. Okay, there you go. It's coming to streaming. Apple TV, it'll be on. So then on Netflix, Jake, tell us about one of your favorite movies this year, The Devil All the Time.
I genuinely loved it. And I know you and I were about to get into it, but I thought that this was such a fascinating movie. It is a lot of different storylines. It is it covers a vast span of time, and it is very much an embodiment of the gladiator line of what we do in life echoes in eternity. It is this idea of how one person's actions can have an impact on not just their children, but then have this spider web impact, and almost like a poison, how like one person's actions can really poison an entire generation, an entire town of people. And here's the deal, is that everything that Sean's going to say about so many of the reasons that he didn't like it arguably are reasons why I did. It is a very somber movie. It is a downer of a movie. It is not a movie that you walk away from in a chipper, happy sense. So many of the characters in the film end up in a very unhappy place. There's not a lot of redemption, but I just thought that it was such a difficult task covering this wide span, not just a massive span of time, but multiple storylines in a mass. So it's like spinning 10 plates, but walking a mile while you do it. And I thought that they did it beautifully. All of the performances, it's an incredible ensemble cast. So many of the performances I thought were top notch. And by the time I didn't think that there was a false note. I didn't think it missed a beat. And by the time the movie was over, everything, even though so much happened, everything made sense to me. All of the characters' actions made sense to me. And I was just kind of felt like, wow. Like that was like, to me, it felt like a Coen Brothers movie. It felt like an early Coen Brothers movie. Like something they would have made early in their career. And I just generally thought it was fantastic. And it's all, I mean, granted, this means less because we're seeing fewer, but like it's, I would say it's arguably guaranteed to be on my top 10 list by the end of the year.
And I want to give the director credit because he shot 35 millimeter, which doesn't ever really happen on Netflix movies. Netflix generally has their filmmakers shoot digitally. I know Irishman had 35 millimeter aspects to it, and also digital cameras, but the director, Antonio Campos, is that how you...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He fought. I actually need to post this. He gave me a great answer about this because I felt like when you're a filmmaker and you're going to Netflix, they want you to shoot digital. Mm. It's just easier. And he fought back and said, can I please shoot 35? And they were like, sure. And so, like, in my opinion, I haven't seen the film, but to me, the movie makes a great indention into the idea that 35 can be used for Netflix movies because they want a digital look, from according to Antonio. But I think it's great.
Is that because they assume most of the stuff is going to play on televisions? Like a few Netflix movies.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Because remember, film is grainy, right? It's not as crystal clear as like a 4K. When you shoot a film on, like, you know, these HD cameras, and they project onto these 4K televisions, they look phenomenal, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, the HD quality. And film can look phenomenal as well, but I don't know the reasoning why Netflix doesn't do a lot of film for their films, but I know this film particularly that he had to fight to shoot on 35, and he did. It was really cool.
All right, so my take on it is simply that I could never recommend this movie to anybody. And I think that really counts against a film after it's done playing, because everything that Jake says is exactly correct. The performances are really great. You get to see actors who you don't expect to be in movies like this playing against type. I'm talking about Robert Pattinson, who does challenge himself a lot, but plays a Midwestern backwater preacher. The movie blows holes through the idea of organized religion and how organized religion can have a deep impact on people in a rural community. It strives for huge talking points and touches on most of them. But it is one of those films where every plot point is further and further down the line of depression, of just like nothing good comes from anything that's set up in the film. Every single plot point ends in some horribly depressing, dour situation. And I'm not saying that I needed a happy ending or a silver lining or like this is the story that they wanted to tell. It reminded me of when we were, I forget what grade we were in, high school at some point, when they encouraged us to read the writings of Flannery O'Connor. Did you guys read Flannery O'Connor?
No.
When you were growing up at all? She writes or wrote homespun, like Midwestern stories that were all just like, they were kind of sick and demented, but like for a reason. It was like, it was almost like that Gothic, American Gothic was the genre type of thing, where things just went horribly wrong for the characters. And that was by design. Mm. And so when I got to the end of the movie, while I appreciated everything that they were going to do, I imagined running into like people at a party and they'd be like, oh, cool. What's a great movie that you've seen recently? And if I ever told them The Devil All the Time, they'd come back and lynch me, like essentially, like I'd be, you can't recommend it to anyone. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes of just a steady march into pure depression. And so, yes, everyone in it is good. But hot damn, that is a depressing film.
I want to address one aspect of this movie, which I don't want to say everyone's talking about, but I saw one person bring up on social media and it caused a ripple effect. Yes.
Okay.
So I saw someone tweet about this saying, hey, just a heads up, like there's a horrific dog death in the film. So be careful. And then everyone was like, okay, well, now I'm not going to watch the movie.
Which I was stunned that you were recommending it because you're such a dog person.
Okay, yeah, but here, and I obviously like I can't watch a movie, and I'm not saying that scene didn't have an impact on me, but and this seems like the most horrible justification.
No,
you don't see the dog. You like the thing that happens to the dog. You see the aftermath of, and it's horrible. It is horrible to see the aftermath of this thing that happens to a dog. But it's not like it graphically shows someone.
You're 100% right.
And so this idea, and I didn't want to like weigh in because I didn't really know this person that had tweeted this thing. Mm. But this idea that there is this horrifically graphic dog death in this movie is inaccurate. Mm. The aftermath of it, yes. And it's not an easy, it's a quick glimpse.
Yeah.
It's not a pretty one. And it's I can't necessarily shake it. But there is not this horribly graphic dog death that you have to endure in the movie. No. And if there was, I couldn't do this.
I probably braced for it because of that tweet. And when it happened, I was like,
oh, you saw the tweet. You saw what I'm talking about.
I did see. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it kind of scared me because I was thinking, how bad is this going to be?
Sure.
And when the scene in question happened, again, not to sound like a monster, but I'm like you. I was like, oh, that wasn't really all that.
Like, and that moment is tough. But also, that moment has a very important, like, it's not for the sake of brutality. That moment is very important to the plot and has ripple effects throughout the entire film.
Also, if you want to nitpick that movie for any of the scenes, like that's like number 9 or 10 of this list of scenes I would go to and be like, hey, you might want to look out for that scene because...
Sure. Honestly, I think Kevin is going to, knowing Kevin, Kevin's going to have a much harder... time with spiders. The spider scene.
Oh, dude, there's a spider scene in it.
Like, I, spiders, like, or like, whatever. Like, I don't love them. I don't like necessarily like have a phobia. Like, Kevin, I think You might literally have to turn the movie off when you see this
movie.
Oh,
moment. Wait, well, you did text. You texted. The
I texted
text
him. Yeah, I said,
Kevin,
and,
like,
and,
oh,
and I
Kevin.
Wasn't being funny. I was like legitimately telling Kevin, like, because I know Kevin doesn't really like spider. Kevin, you might actually have a very hard time watching this scene. Yeah.
I'm still scarred by arachnophobia, so I don't even know.
Okay, this is that movie squeezed into one moment.
When I put on my sandals in my or shoes in the garage to go outside and take the dogs out, my first thought is, what if there's a spider in there? Remember that scene in Arachnophobia where the old guy puts his foot in the slipper
and
he gets bit and he
dies?
Oh,
I want to tell Kevin about this scene so much.
Just
can I tell him?
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Well, do you want to cut it out? Because I just want to get Kevin's react.
No. Is it a spoiler?
No, not at all. No.
Oh, okay.
Well, a guy tries to prove something, so he takes a giant jar of spiders and dumps it, and they all just fall on him and just start like crawling all over his body.
Yeah, it's not happening.
They are horribly realistic spiders, too.
What actor does that?
The dude that was in we interviewed him for the Junkie, the dude that was in the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Wait,
He's like a preacher who's trying to prove a point about like faith.
I used to be afraid of spiders, and now God has given me the strength to not be afraid of spiders.
So he dumps them on himself.
Yeah. You're right. They're so, I think they're CGI, but they're so realistic in how they're like crawling all
over
his body.
They're hairy and leggy and just, it's a lot.
Dude, arachnophobia. I'm not kidding you. I am 36 years old. Lauren still kills spiders for me in this house. Like when I was growing up, my mom was slept across like the hall, and my dad slept across the hall. Like they were like far enough away where it would be a distraction to wake them up in the middle of the night to come kill spiders for me. But my mom every time 3 a.m,
dude,
come in my room and kill my spiders. I'm telling you, it is a genuine fear. Those things make me freak out. It's bad. Like if you put a spider anywhere near me, I'm done. I wouldn't eat a spider
for
$1 million.
You're so much bigger than they are, right?
Doesn't like, matter, man. They're so
you could
gross.
take a shoe and decimate it in like you have a lot
hairy.
Of power in your hand.
You're hairy.
They're hairy. Wait,
they're probably saying the same thing about you.
We all have different things we're afraid of. I guarantee you, each of you has a thing that I would be like, yeah, right. Come on.
Yeah, but I face it every Tuesday at 2:00.
Doing this show.
Doing the show. I genuinely, I would love to hear from people who are deathly afraid of spiders like I am. That and bees. But I have a legit reason for being afraid of bees. So.
You allergic?
No, I was mowing the lawn when I was like 14 and there was a beehive, I guess, in the ground.
That happens all the time.
Yeah, and I went over it. I get 15 or 16 of them stung me. And I remember, I'll never forget it. I was wearing a bathing suit, and I guess I got stung so many times that I didn't know. I didn't know where they all went because I got hit so many times. So I go to take a shower later in the day, and I pull my bathing suit off, and there's a bee in my crotch area.
Oh!
And I have no idea if it's. I don't think it stung me there. I don't remember. But all I remember specifically is that there was a bee in my crotch area of the. It was still moving. Its legs were still moving. Because you know when a bee stings you, the stinger, like, doesn't the bee die later?
I heard that. That's always what I heard. I didn't know if that was a.
Yeah. And it was still, like, the legs were still crawling. And I was like, one, I'm sorry you had to sit in there for as long as you did. But two,
Kevin's the only person that would apologize to a bee.
There's a B in there when there should have been the D in there.
Yeah, and instead of saying I was peeing, I was being, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Gabe,
yeah,
please cut this out of the show.
Come on,
I'm deleting
D.
this whole file.
Thank you.
Are you serious? You're deleting all the
spiders? No, this is great. Okay. This is gold. All right, speaking of gold, let's move on to the blind game this week. We are playing a really difficult one. Hashtag
Gary Goldman.
Gary Goldman blend. I'll go first. Because my choice is probably unusual, and it's really hard because he is in so many amazing films and is really great in so many amazing films. I'm going with Sirius Black, The Prisoner of Azkaban. Yeah,
it's the best
Harry
Potter movie.
I saw that got suggested. And the thing is, yes, it's absolutely the best Harry Potter movie because it's Alfonso, because it's one of the best of the books as well, too. And it's the first time that the franchise matured and figured out what it could be and I think elevated away from just a once every other year, like it elevated away from what Fantastic Beasts is right now, which is a forgettable franchise, to something noteworthy and artistic, and it took the next level. But people also forget, people who had read the books how important the character of Sirius Black was, and to get the casting of him correct was really, really difficult because, spoiler alert for this however long old story, you think that he's the villain. You think that he's the bad guy the entire time. And Gary Oldman is perfect for that. Like, you're not supposed to trust him. Even when he reveals to Harry their connection and the fact that he's essentially working on his side, you almost don't know if you can believe it. And Gary Oldman is so perfect for that. So while I think he's been incredible in so many other films, my favorite film of his is that, because it's my favorite Harry Potter film. I think that he's tremendous casting as Sirius Black. When he does finally sell the fact that I'm on your side, I've been on your side this whole time, I've been watching out for you this entire time, it's a sympathetic version of Gary Oldman that we don't get to see that often. Like, he gets asked to play hard-edged guys or sinister guys, and he becomes very warm and very paternal almost, because he's so committed to Harry's mother and father and wants to look out for their son who's been left behind. And Oldman sells it because he's fucking amazing and he's Gary Oldman. And so I love that we get to see that aspect of him, because I don't think he gets to play it that often. And unfortunately, I think for the rest of the series, he got relegated, not to the sidelines, but every time they pulled out a new Harry Potter movie, they had other big characters that they had to introduce. Mm-hmm. And so then he just became like Uncle Sirius, who was kind of around and helping.
Like a cameo, like in the later films.
Yeah, a little bit. And so Azkaban really gave him his moment to shine, and he was phenomenal in it. And I'm going to use this opportunity to also talk about the scene in Azkaban that Quaron just absolutely nails, which is Harry conjuring the Patronus for the very first time to protect himself from the demons that are coming down to storm him, but at that point believing that it was his father who was going to show up. Like, he's like, only my dad would be strong enough to show up and chase these things away. And he's standing there waiting for the dad to show up, and then finally he's just like, fuck it, I gotta do this myself. And he goes running out and he conjures with Patronus, and of course you realize through the course of time he was watching himself do it. And it's an amazing moment in the book. And when I went into that movie, I was like, there's no way possible they're going to be able to pull that off. Like, it has such an emotional heft to it. And Quaron, because we didn't really know how great Quaron was just yet, he nails it. And it's a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous movie.
Did Harry Potter do Tenet before Tenet did Tenet?
He might have actually done it. Oh, and then he brought Neil in for the next movie. So I think that Robert Pattinson might be playing Goblet of Fire. It's just any character. So that's my pick. Kevin, you're up.
For me, right, so just to get it out of the way.
Yeah,
True Romance would have been my pick, clearly, just because of the initial confrontation scene that he has with Christian Slater when he's playing the Mac on his television, the Richard Pryor film, and just that whole sequence, that whole fight was just amazing. Also, Oldman's scene earlier in the film with Samuel Jackson is great too. So that would have been my ultimate choice, because I think Drexel is definitely you can go to Hannibal too, but that might be the most disappearing I've seen Gary Oldman do in a role. I mean, I think Drexel is so outside of who Gary Oldman is, but just the makeup and the hair. But I mean, I know, Jake, we talk about Hannibal sometimes. He played Mason Verger. I mean, yeah, that was
one of Hannibal's earliest victims.
I mean, but he wasn't.
And also,
there
don't forget
all.
Churchill. Yeah.
Churchill was good.
I want to point out one quick thing too, because right after our show dropped, somebody on social media was like, Gary Oldman blend, like, shared it right away. And the person underneath it was like, oh, it's Drexel, like, put a Drexel gif. And then another person, like a third person, was like, they said don't pick Drexel. And I was like, wow, you guys are really
Jesus.
Yeah. All right. Well, we did.
It's okay.
That,
you can pick Drexel.
Yeah, you can if you want to.
Yeah. And Drexel is my ultimate pick. So if that aside, I went with The Professional only because I feel like that is one of the greatest performances of all time. I mean, here's the thing, and this kind of goes to this idea that the character is a sadistic, horrifically horrible person, but Gary Oldman finds a way to make him entertaining for an audience in a really sadistic, weird way. What I mean by that is, like, when he says, like, the everyone line, right? I mean, that is so over the top and ridiculous, but what he's doing in that scene is so ridiculously terrible and horrifying. I mean, he murders her entire family And then she goes up to the door and meets, yeah. you know, and meets the
I professional. Never doubted that that guy would say it like that.
Yeah, and I think there was just something about the theatrics of the way that character worked, the way he would, like, walk into a room. Again, horrible, horrible individual. But it's the same reason why we watch films like Pulp Fiction, and we kind of go along for the ride with Samuel Jackson's character or John Travolta. They're murderers, they're hitmen, they're killing people, but we are entertained by them, by their discussions or the way they act or the way they move. You know, it's the reason why we laugh when Marvin gets shot in the face in the car. It's a tone thing. It's not, we're not saying that the characters themselves are good people. We're saying that the entertainment comes from the way it's portrayed. Professional is a dark film, horrifically dark film. A great story. And I think Natalie Portman's performance is brilliant in it, but Gary Oldman is so menacing and so disturbing. It's like, it's hard to explain it. Like, when you have a character who's a villain that you want to see more on screen because mm-hmm. because the actor is so good at bringing the villain to life that it creates this strange sense of, like, when I watched Black Panther, for example, I wanted more Killmonger. He's the villain yeah. in the movie, but the character was so over the top and, like, very emotional, but also played into some very entertaining ideas in the way he did things. I find that to be a strange thing as an audience member.
I want to bring this up too, because I would love to break down when actors choose to over the top it mm-hmm. versus when they underplay it. And I'm saying like a Nick Cage doing Castor Troy or Gary Oldman in The Professional.
Castor Troy is a perfect example of a villain that we are entertained by. That's
and
a great
both
example.
Both actors get the chance to ham it up when they are him. But I don't think, and having just rewatched Black Panther, I don't think Michael B. Jordan ever over the tops it. You know, he kind of underplays it a lot of times.
There's some moments where he plays into the theatrics of it, kind of in the beginning, specifically when they're stealing the vibranium and he runs in the car and kisses his girlfriend, like overly kisses her. Like there were aspects of his performance, or like when he walks in and says, "What's up, Auntie?" Like there were like elements of the way he did things in the film that were a bit more, in my opinion.
Is this your
more,
king? That's the best. Oh, God.
Those are a little more theatrical. Those are a little more like you have a villain taking a front stage and kind of doing something more theatrical with the performance. Now, again, Black Panther and Killmonger is not even in the same boat as like Gary Oldman's character in Professional, because there's two different storylines going on. I was just kind of coming at it from the angle of there are ways that villains become entertaining in films. I find it interesting, like Silence of the Lambs. I mean, I don't even know if you would consider Anthony Hopkins the villain in that film, but you still find him entertaining. Yeah. We enjoy his presence on screen, even though he eats people. And I find that to be a very interesting thing as an audience member, that we can engage with horrible people on an entertaining level. Castor Troy is probably mm-hmm. one of the greatest examples you could possibly bring up. Drexel, another great example. Horrible person, mm-hmm. but entertaining to watch. So his character in The Professional, it's funny, I almost went with The Fifth Element as well. Just over-the-top, eccentric characters that are villain-esque, I guess, if you want to put it in that regard. So Professional to me is just that perfect through line of a story that I love, but I also love when he shows up in the movie, even though he's a bad person. And to me, I think Oldman just plays it on a theatrical level that makes it more entertaining. But the tone of the film still stays within its limits. And I think that's kind of a cool thing that he does as a performance. So that's my pick.
Great choice. Jakey?
I chose this.
Jake, I saw you look at me just now when beautiful. I mentioned something.
Oh, God. Look at that.
I went with Mason Verger from Hannibal.
Okay. On YouTube, folks. By the Jake way, is showing us a photo of Mason Verger.
I love how Jake played that off, because I said, who's the character he played in Hannibal? Jake was like, was it Mason Verger? You already knew that. Is it Mason Verger?
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, this is an example of a guy, you know, who's already, the ball's already been brought to the red zone, but he takes it and brings it in for the touchdown. Mm. I mean, like the makeup, obviously
more football
is
like, Jake. That's what the show
you're
needed.
Welcome. Exactly. the makeup obviously is a massive impact. Has a massive impact when it comes to making Gary Oldman disappear. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Mason Verger is in the movie Hannibal, which is the Silence of the Lambs sequel directed by Ridley Scott, and he plays a man who, at the instruction of Hannibal Lecter, while they're having what's, if I remember right, like a very kind of like a sexual moment, mm-hmm. In the moment, like they shatter a mirror and Hannibal Lecter basically tells him to cut off his own face and feed it to the dogs.
God.
And so you're, so the whole movie, he is in basically like, in a hospital bed talking. He's like a multimillionaire and he's talking to Julianne Moore, who now plays Clarice Starling. But it's not just the makeup. It would be easy. Like any actor could have that makeup put on them and then just like give a pretty cool performance, and it would make them
it's
look
like
good.
It's like Charlize Theron in Monster. Like she owns the performance under the makeup.
He takes that. I mean, I love showing that picture to people and saying, "Do you know who that is?" And then people are like, "No," and I'm like, "That's Gary Oldman." They're like, "No." Like I love revealing to people that that's Gary Oldman. And in fact, whenever I got to interview Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour. And of course, the makeup brought up a great opportunity to talk about that. You know, I got to talk about Mason Verger, which is fan, which I loved. But that just even if he weren't buried under that makeup, it's still like a weirdly haunting performance. In the same way with like what Ted Levine did with Buffalo Bill in Signs of the Lambs. The fact that like Hannibal Lecter can be in a movie and not be the creepiest person in the movie is astounding. And it happened, I think, with Buffalo Bill, and I think it happened with Mason Verger and Hannibal.
Bill. Yeah. The Buffalo Bill, no question, is
like
the
Ted
most
Ted Levine
disturbing.
Is great. Yeah. So Mason Verger, he's an incredible villain, but just it's a perfect example of Gary Oldman basically being handed like a gift and saying like, "Hey, like here's 98% of your performance right here with the makeup," and him going, "No, like I'm gonna take it further. Like that makeup's not good enough for me." And he takes it and turns it up to 11, and it makes it like the makeup makes him better, but he makes the makeup better. And it's the perfect marriage of an actor not just using the makeup to like carry him in. He takes it and really, really runs with it.
I do want to say this, and I think that's a great example of him. I think Jake makes a great point about that, because the makeup could have been a crutch, right? It could have been it could have been something he just hid behind. I'm only going to mention this because it is probably the worst movie I've ever seen, and I've mentioned it on the show before.
Yeah,
but Gary Oldman is in a movie called Tiptoes, and it is
I've never seen it.
It is horrifically offensive, and probably next to Battlefield Earth. The worst movie I've ever seen.
What is
seen
the
in my
story? Because it's got good people in it. How did the, what is the story behind
Dude,
this movie?
I feel like we need to watch it.
Here's the thing. Years ago, so Gary Oldman was my favorite actor for a long time. I think he might still be next to DiCaprio, just from like a performance standpoint. But there was a time period when I was going through all of his work. I did this in high school with Benicio del Toro. I was going through all the. Do you remember? You know, it's a random film of del Toro's that I watched because I was doing the same thing. Was Swimming with Sharks, which I had never seen before, with Kevin Spacey and.
Oh gosh, he's in that.
Yeah, I believe so, if I remember correctly. But so going back to Gary Oldman, I was going through his list, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I want to see Dracula. You know, I want to make sure I see you know all these films that he's been in, Sid and Nancy. And then I see Tiptoes. And then my friends in college were like, my two buddies in college were like, we should get that movie and rent it because it looks really bad. This must have been 7 or 8 years ago. I don't remember the story. All I remember is sitting there and I own it. I actually own the film. It's in my collection over here.
I want to see it.
Because I bought it.
I really want to see it.
Let me pull it out.
No. I mean, I want to watch the movie is what I
meant. I know, but let me at least pull out Tiptoes at least. Hold on. Here it is. Look at this.
Who is it? Kate Beckinsale, Matthew McConaughey.
Okay, so Gary Oldman, Kate Beckinsale, Patricia Arquette, Matthew McConaughey. It is hands down, and I will say this right now, is one of the worst movies I've ever seen, and it's incredibly offensive. But if you want to see something really bad, it's not so bad. It's good. It's just it's bad, like really bad. But it's horrible, horrible.
Gary
Oldman.
Well, no one picked Tiptoes for their audience picks.
We can end our show with Tiptoes if you guys want.
But Evan Rook said Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Denise Red went with Mason Verger in Hannibal. Titanic 2.
Titanic 2.
Lee Patton said Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Kim Mason
Jr. I
gotta
be honest, I've never been able to make it all the way through that movie. I've tried multiple times.
Jake and I fell asleep twice. Jake.
Both times I tried watching it, I fell asleep.
Me too. Jake and I interviewed Martin Scorsese for Hugo, and then we had spent all day doing interviews for Young Adult and Hugo, and Jake and I were on like this crazy high from interviewing Martin Scorsese after being there all day. And then we went and saw Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy before the junket, and we both fell asleep. And
I didn't even get to the Tinker.
It's very slow moving. It's very slow moving.
I didn't review the film because I never watched it. I actually felt unethical about reviewing it. So I tried to watch it again based on a screener so I could review it, and I couldn't make it through it.
Do you remember, like, there was, when we did that junket, there was an actor who was running like 30 minutes late and was two floors up, and they're like, hey, do you want to wait around and get this actor? And I was like, no, I don't even know who this guy is, and like, I got to go to the airport, and like, I probably could have waited 30 minutes, but I didn't. I was like, no, I got to go. I don't even, like, I'm not going to use him for my piece. I got Gary Oldman. I got Colin Firth. I'm good. It was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Wait, was it?
Yeah.
That's great. I don't think I was even offered that. Who was he at that point?
No one, really.
No one.
He wasn't Sherlock yet?
I don't think so.
All right. Kim Mason Jr. says Sid Vicious in Sid Nancy. Oh, yeah. Danny Gurch. Okay, so this is the other one I almost went with. Danny Gurch said JFK. He's amazing in JFK.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he's so good. And then Harry Lichtman and many, many others went with Commissioner Gordon in the Dark Knight trilogy.
Jim Gordon.
Yeah, a little surprised we didn't go that way. Oh, no. Okay. All right. Next week, Gabe says we're playing hashtag Tom Hardy blend. Tom Hardy blend. That's a good one.
Can we just do Mask Edition?
Yes, you got to do
it
like
his mask. Only no. I'm saying we only choose from his masked films.
So that's all of his movies.
No, because I can't. I have to pick one, that, and it's not a mask one.
Okay.
I have a very favorite one, and I can't wait to talk about it. Oh, in fact, I want to rewatch it this week because I can't wait to see it. So,
if you want to participate in Tom Hardy blend,
no, do it Nolan style.
Go to social media and use hashtag Tom Hardy blend, or you can email us at realblend@cinemablend.com. Oh my
gosh, listening to the podcast, the tears just rolling down.
There was a guy in our hospitality suite today who was just ripping on Dunkirk and
Tenet. How did it come up? Oh, Tenet. Okay.
Tenet. And then, but it was like an LA person who hadn't been able to see Tenet was mad. Kind of the theory we were talking about.
That's the argument I made last week.
I never wanted Gabe to wrap somebody up more in my life. My
is this someone we know?
So no, I don't think so.
Yeah, we know. We know this person. Yeah. I was trying to save you there, Kevin.
Yeah, we'll keep it very vague.
Text me who
but
it is.
But anyway, someone sent us a review at realblend@cinemablend.com. And this comes from VHerd99, who says, I seriously love this podcast. Hey guys, I've been listening to you guys for probably 6 months, and this podcast has made work so much easier. Listening to you geek out about movies is so much fun. You guys even got me and my dad into Tarantino movies. And honestly, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood might be my favorite because of Kevin's obsession with it.
Hey!
But to end it all, love you guys. Thanks for the laughs and take care. That is from VHerd99. So thank you very much.
I put on Hollywood again the other night just for like the 20th time. I just watched the whole.
It's like a refreshing summer drink. It's so nice.
Yeah. I agree with you. There's nothing better than putting on that film and going, I'll watch five minutes.
If he doesn't have Pulp Fiction on his resume, it would be his best film. But I just don't know if he'll ever top Pulp Fiction, unfortunately. So we've seen some incredible support from everybody who had been backing the show. A lot of people have found us while you're in quarantine and have caught up with old episodes. We thank you very much. Welcome. Make sure you follow us on social media at RealBlend. Go over to the Facebook community page. We have a Facebook community page. There is a Reddit subcommunity that people can follow if they want to chime in and talk about all things related to the show. And you can follow the hosts at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell. Drop us a review on iTunes. We will read them next week. We'll be back next week with an all new show. We're going to record our bonus episode next with a really fun topic. And Gabe has something important he would like to say. Gabe.
I was going to plug just that. Subscribe to the premium feed.
Ooh, nice.
Because we are deciding who's the best director of all time.
My choice is going to surprise
definitive.
You guys.
It's the director of Tiptoes.
It is.
It is.
So until next week, the game.
Tiptoes.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.